Hello and welcome to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. I'm Kelly Taylor. Today's episode was born out of my current life events. I'm getting married, and in planning a wedding, whether you care that much about the particular details of the day or not, you're still asked to make decisions about this or that. For example, are you going to wear a white dress? Will you have a best man? Are you going to throw the bouquet or the garter? The planning process has led me to question why some of these common wedding traditions even exist in the first place. And some of them have some quite bizarre origins. Kristen Banta is a Los Angeles event and wedding planner and designer. She's thrown some big parties, including the movie premiere for Three Billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri, and a ton of beautiful, super unique weddings. She has a cool perspective. When you think of a typical wedding, she definitely pushes boundaries. She finds unique aspects in people and tries to bring that out through the decor and design instead of just, you know, going with what the trends are. I loved meeting her and getting the chance to pick her brain. She was a lot of fun, so I hope you enjoy.
From the Fox 11 studios in Los Angeles, California, it's the Olympic and Bundy podcast with host Kelly Taylor.
Okay, so Kristen, I want to talk a little bit about, where are you originally from?
I was actually born in Indianapolis. I grew up here, but I've been here since I was 12.
What's your background? Like, were you always interested in planning parties?
You know, it's funny that you say that because my go-to answer is no. I was an actor when I was a kid. My mom was an actress. So it's just, I'd show up on set with her and that's what I did. And, you know, that's where I thought I was going in life. I didn't finish high school. I ended up going to Pepperdine. They gave me a full ride and I was there in their theater arts program. And again, just doing my thing. Just
straight from high school?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you left high school early.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't do a senior year. I left kind of in the middle of my junior. I tested out.
Wow.
And so I ended up, in college in a theater arts program. And, you know, and I was still kind of acting was still what I was doing because that's all I knew. And so when people are like, well, was this always just kind of your jam? No, my immediate go-to is it's not. But if I look back, I think about like, okay, so this is a silly memory, but one of the most precious books that I had when I was a kid is somebody gave me this book and was like all these magical little events. It was an event every single month. And it was like a book of celebrations throughout the year. And, you know, one was like Maypole and another one was like, right? And I wish to God I could find this book. But like, I'll never forget, like one was where they, you know, created like these little water rafts and they would send these rafts down. I can't remember what month that was, but that was a part of that celebration. And I loved this book and it was all about the celebration. And I didn't even reflect on that until much later. And I was like, oh my God, because I always tried to recreate what was in this book. It wasn't until literally as I was leaving college when I was like, I don't want to be in front of the camera anymore. You know, like it served me well. It paid bills. It was great. But I really wanted to be behind the scenes. And so I don't know. I mean, that kind of ignited, like, what can I do with this degree that I have? I'd studied production and you know, stage management, the tech side of things from, you know, lighting and set design and all of that. And carpentry. I learned how to weld, you know.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
So what was I going to do with that? And that's kind of ignited this idea of, okay, well, maybe I'll do, like, events in fashion. And I had a few opportunities that came to me and started doing that, and one thing kind of led to another.
Yeah, that's probably a unique background for someone in your event planning industry, is like knowing how to weld, knowing lighting and the production background from acting, right?
It helps. It helps greatly. I mean, it's the thing that we always refer to in the office is, you know, it's anytime you can at least be fluent in the languages, as many as you can. If you can't, at least be conversational.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not fluent in the languages of tech, but I'm conversational. You know,
yeah.
I at least know what I'm doing enough, and it really serves me in terms of really being able to design and to understand how to produce.
Yeah, you have a working knowledge of mm-hmm. some of this stuff. What are some of the different types of events that your company does now?
We, our company is really diverse. We do a huge range between, you know, corporate, social, and weddings. You know, we have a handful of select weddings that we'll take on each year, all of which we really focus and design projects that that, you know, we're excited about and that are larger productions. Within our sort of corporate umbrella, that work is really diverse. I mean, it's taken us from, you know, out on you know, producing events on a ship in the middle of the Asian seas to, you know, doing, we did the premiere for three billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri recently, and that was another one. So, you know, it's anywhere from premieres to events for some of our tech clients, you know, upfronts, product launches. So it's fun because every week is a little bit different.
Yeah, which is totally plays into your production background as far as like putting on corporate events with maybe presentations that are put on big stages and lighting and all of that. Was the premiere for Three Billboards here or in Missouri?
It was here, actually. It was at Neuhaus. So it was in Hollywood, and it was a great film to be able to design something for.
I just watched that. It's amazing.
Amazing film, right? Yeah. And they are crushing it in award season right now. It's exciting.
Aunt Becky, she's killing it.
Amazing. Yeah. I'm obsessed with her.
Yeah, I love not hearing anything about a movie and then just watching it kind of cold. And that's how I was for Three Billboards. And I loved it. Mm-hmm. So related to wedding planning, are people hiring you do they come to you and say, okay, I have an idea in my mind, please help me execute it? Are a lot of people coming to you with certain ideas, or is it kind of like, oh, we want to have a wedding, this many people, please give me a design idea?
We see the entire range.
Yeah.
I love it when a couple does have an idea. You know, the more, particularly in the weddings are such an interesting animal because it's, I think that we will always make sure that we have a healthy, you know, handful of weddings in our roster every year because they're such interesting design projects. And if we're doing our jobs right, and if the couple is giving us something interesting, which hopefully, you know, if they can kind of know themselves, the better the client, because then we can, you know, really get into what do they love? What are they into? How can we tell their story? What are the things that we're going to pull out from who they are as a couple, who they are as individuals, to really kind of tell their story so that the guests, when they arrive, it's just this wonderful sort of celebration of why these two have come together. I mean, let's not lose sight of that. Yeah, it's a great party. Many times a lot of money is spent. That's all great. But it's the takeaways in the guest experience, and that really is in making it relevant and making it personal. So if the couple can come to us and they do have some sort of an idea, even if it's not, I want it to look like this, I'd prefer that they didn't have that developed because that is what I do, and telling stories is what I do. I can probably figure out how to tell it better than they can because I know what's possible, right? Yeah. It's not their job to know what's possible. So, you know, for me, it's just really about the interview process and finding out, what are you passionate about? What makes you laugh? What do you guys like to do together? What's your favorite, you know, what are all your favorite things?
And then you go on your own and sort of think of what, like a vision board and what elements you'd want to incorporate?
Yeah. I mean, every time it's, you know, I may start with a different sort of nugget of what kind of stands out to me. But in a perfect world, I love it when our clients can put together images that they're really passionate about, not from other events. I really, you know, I discourage them finding pictures from, you know,
Pinterest.
Wedding magazines. And Pinterest sometimes can be great, but it can also be, it can kind of crush imagination a little bit because it's, you know, they run the risk of saying, okay, you know, here, I want this. And it's like, look, I don't want to see somebody else's event. That was somebody else's story. That was somebody else's tale. I want to know it doesn't matter if it's random and you think it doesn't mean anything. Like, I don't care if you take a picture of a shoe and you're like, I dig this shoe, or a wallpaper and you think that's insane, or a picture of your favorite sort of photo shoot that you saw in Vogue. Your favorite house, a chair that you think is like bananas cool, whatever that is, I'll start to see a pattern, and then we'll start to figure out what to kind of bring out and you know, how to put that together. And yeah, I will put together usually some sort of a board. Pinterest is actually a great tool for that.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, it's a great image bank when it's used for the right purposes. I think it can be great, but I think it can be limiting as well.
Yeah, not to stress you out. Like, oh, these are amazing. Mine's not going to be like that. I saw on your Yelp someone said that you helped put on a wedding at the Warner Brothers backlot.
Mm-hmm.
That's so cool.
It was really fun.
I didn't know that. Is that a thing that people can do?
It is a thing can do. Wow. It's there's a lot of great spaces on the lot. You know, there's so many different things that you can do. In this particular case, they used Brownstone Street, and we did basically, you know, a dinner in the middle of the street and kind of carpeted the street and dropped chandeliers. It was kind of cool.
Was that hard to coordinate with Warner Brothers?
You know, it's a different production because, you know, you're talking about a lot and union and so it's kind of a different animal, but
yeah.
No, they're wonderful there. And, you know, they took good care of us and we, you know, were able to work very cohesively with
yeah.
that team. They have a great events team over there.
When you think back, are there any, in terms of obviously you put on a ton of events in all different kinds of ways, but when it comes to weddings, are there any in particular that stand out to you?
Oh, God, we've had some great adventures. You know, I love any time a client can bring us something that is totally authentic. And it's not like, you know, the more kind of off the grid, the better. Sometimes that can be very difficult, you know, to give it sort of credence. We don't want this day to become silly. But
right.
I guess for me... what I think interesting is about weddings, I'll go forward before I go backwards because it'll maybe explain why I would select the ones that I do. I think that the most interesting thing about weddings is like if you can kind of know the rules and know the why behind some of the traditions, then you know how to break them. And that's what kind of sets us up for something really, really interesting. I do not believe in approaching weddings with some sort of a theme. Because then it kind of, it oversimplifies the couple. That the couple is the theme, right?
Thank you.
Word.
I
got
so
you.
Happy you said that.
Well, and that's the best theme of all, right? Is those nuances. So, you know, well, I'll give you an example. I had this is kind of one of my most well known because it's one that I retell often because I thought it was such an amazing experience. But I had a couple that came to me and they said, we want an angel devil theme, and I was like, okay, well, you know. We don't really do themes and you know, so okay, why don't you tell me a little bit about the why behind it before, you know, but I don't know if this is maybe the right event for us. And when they started talking about the why, it was the most beautiful story. And it turned out that he said, well, you know, when I was originally, you know, met my then fiance, I was in a really dark place, and upon meeting him, it just brought me into this incredibly higher place in life, and it changed me. It changed the course of my life, and I, you know, I was like, oh my God, okay. So I see kind of where they were going with this whole angel devil theme, and you know, I said, so it sounds to me like you're talking a little bit more about sort of man's ascension from hell into heaven, and that's a really, I mean, this is what literary works have written about since the dawn of time. I mean, that's something very deep and very exciting and very complex. We can do something with that. You know, so
yeah.
we actually, and they were from the theater, we did a very dramatic treatment of it to honor who they are. They're theater guys, which was cool. But you know, we gave it a backbone. And I believe that at the end of the day, if kind of Lux is at the helm, we can get away with everything.
Yeah.
You know, then you can afford to be a little cheeky. Then you can give it a little wink. And then you can, you know, have some fun. But, you know, it's all about kind of giving it a couture approach so that nothing is ever cheapened, you know?
Yeah. Definitely.
And that ended up being one of my favorite weddings. I mean, it was really out there. It took me a while to kind of digest it. But, you know, we started off, we had hell on one side and heaven on the other. And the guests were told to pick a side. And
oh, and wow. So, like, the look was maybe one side was fiery kind of colors and lighting. And then the other side was more angelic kind of.
Yeah, we started right out of the gates with the ceremony as you know, there was the heavenly gate and there was
yeah.
the gate to hell. And, you know, we had servers that were in like, you know, cages as headpieces. One on the hell side, they were serving like smoking cocktails. And on the heaven side, we had, you know, shirtless angels with big angel wings
yeah.
with trays of balls of cotton candy. And guests got to pick a side. And it was really fun to see what people would do too. They'd be like, I'm going over to heaven. Like,
yeah.
Well, fine, I'll see you. I'm
going to
be in hell.
I'm going to hell.
Yeah, and it was really, I mean, people had a really good time with it. And it was very much the couple, which
yeah.
was cool, you know?
I love that. That's cool. I mean, that's definitely doing something that's very original to those two people, it seems like, and very much them, seems like that should be the number one thing when you're throwing a party. I mean, it's about you and
totally.
Your fiance. In your experience, are there things at weddings that guests don't maybe pay that much attention to, but when planning it, you end up spending a lot of time and money thinking about, but then when the actual wedding happens, it's sort of like, why'd I waste my time on that?
That's a really interesting question.
Because my sister, since I'm getting married, my sister, I asked her that, and she was saying how don't waste as much time and money on the invitations and things that guests will just kind of look at and then use for, what time's the ceremony? Where's it at? Okay. And put more time into maybe the photographer or other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. It's a very personal question. You know, the invite thing this comes up often because it is something where it's like, yeah, but they're just going to throw it away. However, this piece, it tells you everything.
Yeah.
It tells you how much do you want to go to that wedding?
Yeah.
You know, you got a lot of invites. This is, wow, this one looks pretty exciting. I'm keeping it real, but it's true. You know,
yeah.
It tells you how much time are you going to maybe spend looking for that special outfit? What are you going to invest in the gift? It's horrible. I know everything I'm saying is horrible, but it's true. And on the positive side, it's fun. You know, you get this thing, and so, you know, sometimes it's like getting this little treasure sometimes when you get the piece that's, you know, telling you about this event. It's foreshadowing what to expect and what to come. I don't know. I think it's a really interesting piece, but I also understand why some might not want to invest in developing that particular collateral. It is expensive.
Yeah.
There's also, you know, certainly, you know, a total justification why to go green and do everything online as well, which I completely support. You know, I think that sometimes, you know, there's this tremendous emphasis on flowers, you know, and I get this question all the time, like, well, when will we look at flowers? I'm like, well, never. Really not ever. I mean, like, let's build your house first, then let's paint the walls, let's then do the flooring and the finishes and the hardware, and then let's pick your furniture and figure out what we're going to put in it, and then we'll decide what we're going to put on your coffee table. You know, that's kind of, to me, what the flowers are. I mean, would you decorate your entire home in walls of flowers? You wouldn't. You would find eclectic accents that tell your story, you know, in terms of how you want to do your home and what you want it to feel like. But it doesn't necessarily have to be that, you know, why is that thing always just flowers?
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes it's a landscape of props and decor. You know, maybe it's stacks of beautiful coffee table books and a floral accent. But I think that that's one of those things where people get really caught up in, like, well, what are my flowers going to be and how much do I spend? What's the floral budget? Don't worry about that. You know, to figure out what you want to say first. You know, maybe I've had done weddings that didn't have a single flower. It didn't make sense for the landscape of that event. You know, it didn't make sense to the decor. And I think that people get really caught up in that, and that can get very expensive. You know, a little can go a long way.
Yeah. Is there anything that you think should be the main, like, what is top three focuses in planning a wedding that you think a couple should focus on? Is it, you know, say the venue? Is it making sure you have good food, a good playlist, like a good music setup? What stands out to you as something that you should really take focus on?
Well, there's two different ways of looking at this. I mean, I think for first and foremost, anytime, you know, when one gets engaged, you've got a million voices around you. And I think, you know, it's really important to look at each other and to really figure out, like, who are we in this day? What's important to us? What are the things that make us happy? Let's focus on those, because it's really easy. It's a big spend. It can get really, you know, just much. And it's really important that you don't, you know, one doesn't lose themselves in the process. So, I mean, I think that's the one thing that's really important to hold on to first and foremost. On the other hand, you know, in this process, there's so many things to consider. And again, so many voices are coming in and you're getting so wound up in all these things. And, you know, well, what's going to be, we need a welcome amenity and all this stuff. The stuff doesn't matter if the creature comforts aren't considered. And what I mean by creature comforts is, you know, we can design the most amazing, provocative, cool couture event ever. But if people are hungry, if they don't have a drink in hand, if they're cold, if they don't have a place to sit, if their heels are sinking into grass and they are literally, like, immobilized because they are, like, wedged into, you know, grass in their brand new heels that they busted out for your event, Their creature comforts aren't met. They're not happy. We can't begin to do cool stuff if our guests aren't just happy in sort of their root needs. And that's the most important thing to consider. Make sure that everyone's comfortable first, and then figure out if you want to add some bells and whistles. But if they're happy, you already have the makings of a successful event. You know, music's not too loud. People have got cool jams. You're thinking of what your whole crowd wants to listen to, not just like those guys from your early hair band days. You know, right?
Yeah, a mix of genres, mm-hmm. a mix of decades.
Totally.
It's funny you say that about the bells and whistles, because that's definitely how I feel. I just want everyone to come and have fun and enjoy themselves, and you know, everyone that we love to be in one place. But then, in going through it, people in your life start to ask you, oh, hey, are you going to do this? And then I'm sort of have the personality to where if someone asks me something, then I think, oh, wait, should I? I don't know. I wasn't going to do that. Am I supposed to do that?
And totally. Second guessing yourself. Like
all this mm-hmm. other stuff to where I can see that, yeah.
It can be a crazy making process, you know, especially because it's many times it's the largest event that you may have ever planned. It may ever will plan, you know. It's a big deal.
Where did you get married?
I actually got married downtown at a place called Cicada, which had not been open for very long at the time. It was a brand new location, and it was one of the sort of first venues that had been completely restored in its original sort of Art Deco decor, gorgeous Art Deco building downtown. And my husband and I really needed to have a hands-off approach because it couldn't feel like work to me. Oh, so yeah. We just kind of did a like...
You were already doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
Yeah, I mean, not to the same degree that I am now. This is at the very beginning of when I opened my business, really. But I mean, I've been in events since college. So, yeah, I had to kind of just step out and not let it overtake me. Because I don't host the way that I host for my clients. Everything is spent on my clients. I don't do that in my regular life. Yeah. It holds no interest for me. Everyone's like, oh, you must love planning parties. I'm like, I don't throw parties. I don't do that. No. Not for me.
Not in your off time.
Uh-uh.
Did you have a big wedding?
Bigger than I thought that I would. But it was kind of a coming of age for me. Like, I've always feel like I've done things in kind of like more of a left of center way. Everything's like, you know... That was the one day where I was like, let's not go so punk rock here. Like, let's just go kind of down the middle on this one and have like a more traditional day, which I think would surprise a lot of people. They would think that, you know, maybe I would do something a little bit kind of off the beaten path. I didn't. It was actually a very, very traditional day. And my husband's English. It was appropriate. You know, that's really, it's he's coming from a very different place. So.
Yeah. So it sort of fit for both of you.
Totally.
Got it. Oh, how did you meet him?
We were introduced. We were both actually working for, we were both working under the Sony Music umbrella, and my husband was an A&R, and we were introduced by a guy that was, you know, a band on a different label and was like, you guys have to meet. It started with us just meeting in the courtyard, and we'd like smoke cigs and hang out and talk about who we're dating. And I'd be like, I was dating that guy last night. And he's like, yeah, well, I was out with this person, you know, and we'd like joke. And I don't know, there was this one night when I was trying to get out of the habit of dating, like, you know, people that were not good for me. And I was supposed to go out with somebody that was not good for me. And he flaked on me that night. I remember sitting in my place. I just got in this new place in West Hollywood. And I was sitting there and I was like, what am I doing? Like, it's Ant. My husband's name is Anthony. I was like, it's been Ant this whole time. Like, what am I doing? And I called him and I was like, I'd like to come over. And I remember he lived in Echo Park, and I drove over, and that was, I never left.
Was he like, okay, yes, please.
Yeah. He was like, yeah, come over for tea. And so I did. And, it's now we're in our 18th year.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
18 years. Wow.
Yeah.
Where in England is he from?
He's from Lincolnshire.
Where is that? And is that
so
north?
It's basically, it is due east of Manchester.
Oh, due east. Got it. Okay.
Yeah. He basically lives, he's from a place that looks like Hogwarts. There's no way it's a real place. It's not.
Magic.
It's not. It's bizarre. It's like legit Hogwarts. It's like Diagon Alley is like his main.
It looks like that?
Yeah. It's absurd.
Oh, that's amazing.
Right?
Yeah. Do you guys go there a lot?
No, actually, I wish we did. We don't. And it's far. Like, you arrive in Heathrow and it's like a 3-hour
drive.
Yeah.
Got it.
But we should go. My kid needs to see like his dad's hometown. He hasn't been there since he was a tiny.
You could go for Harry and Meghan's wedding.
Yeah, I should do that. I'll pop by.
Yeah. Just pop in, give them some tips.
Yeah.
Is there any particular things that you've noticed this year as far as quote unquote trends?
Yeah, totally. You know, it's interesting. We've been every year is so interesting what people gravitate towards and where the wedding world goes. I mean, it's like we went from like we had this whole like mason jar phase, remember that phase, and then, you know, and the wooden tables and, you know, and then there was the balloons, and then this past year we saw, you know, the whole palm frond banana leaf, and my God, it was like geode-tastic.
The sliced.
Oh, good God, man. Yeah. No more. We're gonna go ahead and we're gonna hang that one up.
Done with the geodes.
Yeah, we're done with the geodes. They had their time. Let's let them go back to the earth.
Yeah.
It's interesting. So this year I think that we're gonna see some different textures coming into play. I mean, I think we'll see where we saw, you know, a lot of metallics and a lot of gold. And then, you know, we kind of went into a rose gold phase. Now I think we're moving a little bit more towards copper and concrete, highly textural, which I think is fantastic. I'm pro this. You know, definitely, I think still bringing some of the sort of, you know, surf culture in, and, you know, we'll see a little bit more in the tribal category there, as well as, you know, a little bit more the sort of, you know, psychedelic, psychotropic. I mean, so going in that zone, transparent structures and you know, working with you know, more translucence and transparency.
When you say transparent structure, like a something that's maybe glass.
Mm-hmm, totally. Working with, you know, glass and plexi and clear structures again, which has, you know, definitely more of a modern spin. We're going to see more black and white again, which again has a little bit more of that mod graphic approach. What else? I think those are the ones that really stand out to me, and I think, you know, holds some interest. You know, definitely wall textures and wall patterns and large floral prints, definitely going to see a resurgence of that as well.
Yeah.
All of which have a very cool possible implementation.
I saw that you posted about, there's an artist who does, basically she paints the people.
Oh, I'm obsessed. Yeah, she's so cool.
What's her name? Alex something? What's her last name?
Oh, God, of course, of all days.
Mead?
Alex Mead. That sounds
Alex
right,
Mead.
Alex Mead.
I follow her. I'm following her on Instagram. I don't even know how I found
Alexa
her, but
Alexa Mead. Yeah,
Alexa. It's so cool. She did she paints people to be as if they're in a painting. And I saw someone did that for their engagement photos, mm-hmm. which is so cool.
Yeah, I loved that. She actually did something for, so Refinery 29 did 29 rooms. I don't know if you had a chance to see it, but she did the first room there. Which was very, very cool. I mean, of like all the rooms that were there, that was kind of, from an interactivity standpoint, it was kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
But not being able to paint them, you know, what she did, which was kind of interesting, is she painted, you know, all sorts of like outerwear that you could put on. So she painted the jackets that mixed in with the background and glasses and hats. So, you know, though she couldn't paint the individuals, you know, you could stand in line and put on all the stuff and then kind of mix into the background, which was cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She's super talented. That's cool.
Amazing talent, yeah.
So, okay, one of the main reasons why I reached out to you guys is because in just, I don't know, going through the logistics of planning a wedding, I've just been asking myself, I have this like annoying habit of looking things up online, just like, hold on, why are we doing this? And so I just started kind
of
digging. Well, I mean, it ends up being pretty funny because I started digging around about certain origins because there's a lot of common wedding traditions that, like, we've all been to weddings. Like, I've been to a bunch just in the past few years from high school and college friends. And there's been so many times where I've been sat there and just thinking, like, that's interesting that everyone does that. And not to say it's a good or bad thing, but just, that's interesting that, you know, we wear a veil or do this or that. So I definitely want to talk about some of the interesting like background on maybe how some of these traditions came up.
Oh, it's my favorite topic because some of them are so bizarre.
So super crazy. Yeah. The first one, the rhyme, which I feel like I remember my mom saying that when she got married. My mom got married when I was like in middle school, and I feel like that's the first time I heard it. But I didn't even realize there's an extra line at the end. Something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue. A sixpence in your shoe. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know that one existed.
Yeah, it's a little tagline, a little lesser known tagline.
Yeah, but because I wrote down a couple things about each origin just because I, you know, have an annoying researching habit. But this actually came from England mm-hmm. in 1870.
Well, much of them do because they were there before we were. So yeah, they date back
True.
Earlier.
That's a good point.
They go all the back, you know, Roman days. It's crazy. My husband will be the first to remind you.
Oh,
I'm like,
yes.
I'm part Irish. I'm part Scottish. He's like, I'm Roman. I'm like, oh, okay, take it easy.
I am the original.
Right? I'm OG.
So something old apparently was to provide protection for the bride's baby, eventual baby.
There's a lot of different theories on this. I'm curious to hear what.
Yeah. Okay. So let me read you some of the background on this rhyme. Something borrowed. Oh, first of all, so something old, something new. I couldn't find anything about. It may have just been like thrown in there to make the rhyme work. I don't know. Something borrowed could refer to something that like another happy bride wore, and then it could transfer to the new bride in terms of like, oh, prosperity, wear this.
Totally,
it'll be
borrowed
better.
Happiness yeah. is what it refers to, yeah.
Yes. And, oh, also, it was recommended, and something borrowed, to wear the undergarment of a woman who has been blessed with children because the clothes can communicate fertility
sure.
to the bride.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, the old fertility
Makes
clothes.
Makes sense, yeah. And something blue could be to basically baffle the evil eye, which has come up a lot. A lot of, in researching some of this stuff, a lot of people in centuries past seems like they did a lot of things with weddings to ward off evil spirits.
They had a real thing with evil spirits.
Yeah.
It was a big thing with those guys.
Which I'm like, yeah. Okay, all right, I'm into that. Oh, and then a sixpence at her shoe is for prosperity.
Totally.
Which
so,
makes sense.
Yeah, and the blue is, I mean, that's love and purity
yeah.
is what that symbolizes.
Have any of the weddings that you've done, do people do that?
I don't see it very often. It's definitely unusual.
Yeah.
It's always interesting to me to see when, you know, somebody really holds like hard and fast
yeah.
on a certain tradition. And I'm certainly not going to be the one to, you know, be like, well, you know why they really do
yeah.
that. You know, I'm not, they can do just hold, just love it. Just do it and, you know, get into it. Because sometimes I feel like if people knew the
yeah.
the backstory on the why behind it, they might be like, ew, I'm not yeah. gonna, okay, yeah.
Yeah, that actually brings me to the garter toss.
Oh, no, I can't even with the garter toss. I really have a hard time with this.
So a lot of times it comes up because I don't care either way if someone does this or that. You know, like, it's to each their own. Sometimes, like, at this point in 2018, it's like, can be a fun thing, you know, mm-hmm. depending on the vibe of the people at the wedding. But the DJ that we're using asked if, you know, we're going to do this or that, talking about the timeline. And Cole, my fiance, he asked about the garter toss, and he's like, yeah, I guess. And I'm like, Cole, I don't think you know what he's talking about, because he would be super embarrassed for his Grammy to be watching, like,
totally.
Taking the garter, you know, whatever. But the garter toss, apparently, back in the day, like in the Middle Ages, they used to follow the bride and groom mm-hmm. to their room mm-hmm. to make sure they were consummating the marriage, sealing the deal. And some of the like rowdy, handsy guests would snatch like pieces of like fabric off of the bride. Mm-hmm. And before elastic was invented, the garter held up the stockings, and that would be like the go-to thing. So they would steal the garter from the bride.
Totally. Well, and they also sometimes, that would be how they would report back, like, yeah, I hit that. So he comes back and he's like, look what
yeah.
I got. I got me this garter. It's
yeah.
it's so yuck.
Yeah.
I can't with the garter
so
toss.
Then,
it's
so
absurd.
Then it just somehow transpired into, okay, see, so like, I guess maybe people suddenly started as time passed. Okay, it might be a little bit intrusive to go to someone's room and make sure they're getting it on. So we'll just hang back and we'll take off the garter here at the reception. You know, it's just funny how that has transpired.
We'll hang back. Oh my God, so good. But I mean, that's the thing. I like, listen, everyone needs to just do them. But I will tell you, as an observer, let alone the fact that that's the background and there's no way around that. That's where this comes from. And
yeah.
It's, you can't ignore that if you know. It's like you can't unsee it. But I don't know, just something about this idea of like you're going to sit down in front of all of your guests who have just had their dinner. And, like, your dude is going to fish up your beautiful gown for, like, an undergarment. And then not only is he going to take it off of your person in front of all of your people, but then he's going to throw it to the dudes to catch, like sharks catch. Like, I don't – it's so – I can't.
Meanwhile,
yeah.
There's, like, I'm too sexy for my shirt playing,
right?
You know?
Oh, my God. Of course. Like, and
why great not? Aunt Judith is just watching on.
Oh, totally. And you've got, like, a bunch of rowdy dudes. They're like, I got this, yeah. Dude. Like, oh, my God, please don't do that.
Yeah, it's
– I get hives. Like, I have to leave the room. I'm just like, I can, this one, I'm going to just step out. It's all good. Do you guys enjoy your time? I'm just going to – now it's going to be my time. I'm going to go get a Perrier. It's going to be great.
A short break. The wedding bouquet is kind of interesting too.
Totally.
I read this on modernwedding.com, but there's a couple different things that I read about the wedding bouquet. One is that, well, of course it goes back to driving away evil spirits and
it always does.
Yeah. Strong smelling herbs and spices were thought to ward those off, mm-hmm. but also people didn't shower a lot.
Right.
So it would like help mask body odor basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They didn't have deodorant. I mean, there's not like,
yeah.
You couldn't.
So the bride was kind of smelly and used herbs and spices. Mm-hmm. And also apparently dill flowers weren't used as much, but herbs were. And dill is apparently the herb of lust.
Mm-hmm.
So dill was a popular one. It's kind of an aphrodisiac and, you know, increase the sexual desire when they go to the room and then people steal the garter.
That's right.
Yeah. and then Queen Victoria has come up a lot too. When I was looking this stuff up, she was like kind of a,
she was a
trendsetter for some of these
yeah.
common things.
Super punk rock.
Cause she very punk rock,
right?
Queen Victoria. She apparently, your husband might know this phrase, a tussie mussie,
mm-hmm.
which is like a tiny round clutch of flowers.
Mm-hmm.
She was like one of the first people to do that with the little flower bouquet
also
kind of
known
situation.
As like a posy, yeah, totally.
Yeah. And so then people started using flowers as giving it to someone they love, and then it became related to like romance,
mm-hmm.
which maybe has, you know, transferred to now.
Or maybe, you know, that comes from like, you don't smell so savory here.
Yeah.
Here, have this posy.
Yes, please take this.
Let me, this one's
since,
on me, guys.
Since we
here.
Don't have deodorant.
Yeah.
The veil I'm still kind of confused by, because veils come up in not just weddings, but people wear veils in,
mm-hmm.
in different parts of life and history.
Totally.
One origin could be the ancient Greeks and Romans' fear of evil spirits and demons.
Sure.
Again, all these people are very paranoid of the evil spirits. But
maybe
also,
it was a thing back then that we are just not getting today.
I know.
Was just a real like bad scene
yeah.
with the evil spirits.
Yeah, totally. Here's another potential reason why brides started wearing veils is shielding the face, because, you know, maybe it was an arranged marriage and they hadn't mm-hmm. seen them until the ceremony. So they would walk down with the bride. Which, have you seen Game of Thrones?
Of course.
Because that reminded me of Game of Thrones, because when Fry, that family, mm-hmm. marries off the daughter, well, Robb Stark wronged him. And there was several daughters that he could have married, but he married someone else. So then they marry off Tully, I think is his name. And he doesn't see her. So she's walking down the aisle and he doesn't see her because she has the veil covering her face. And then they remove it and suddenly she's very beautiful. So he's pumped up.
Yeah, well, most of the time. So this is my favorite background on the veil. A large percentage of the time, this was actually because they would try to get rid of their least desirable daughter. Because they're trying to get rid of the daughters. Daughters have got to go. So the least desirable, they're basically tricking somebody into marrying the least desirable, you know,
yeah.
aesthetically daughter. So, you know, if she was looked a certain way, they thought, well, she's going to be hard to get rid of. Let's veil that gal. Let's send her down and he's going to get what he's going to get. And I can't get upset. That's, you know, it's wretched. It's really bad. Yeah.
It's too late.
Yep. Well, whoops, you're bad.
That reminds me. So in looking up the why bridesmaids' dresses match, I also came across the history of the best man, which is super messed up. So apparently, in certain small towns, or just, I mean, in general, men had to basically steal brides from families. Mm-hmm. So they then picked a man to stand as the groom's backup in the event that, say, they're getting married, and then the family comes to say, no, no, you can't take her, we're taking her. Or, you know, maybe the unwilling bride just wants to run away. The best man was there to serve as basically his, the kidnapper's protector, almost.
Totally. Yeah.
Like a good swordsman in case, like, you know, there was a rumble and the family came to save her. Mm-hmm. He would be right there next to him, ready to fight to protect the stolen bride, which
totally
is hilarious because now it's just like, oh, plan my bachelor party.
Well, on the flip side of that, okay, so, well, and we'll get into to the gals on this side because there's a lot of good stuff on that side. But one of the reasons for the bride having her little girl posse, you know, now your bridesmaids, was so that, you know, they were basically all dressed the same and they were kind of like her little squad where they would kind of insulate her and protect her. From, you know, from being stolen, you know, evil spirits, the whole thing.
Yeah, which is why they would be encouraged to dress alike, and even like the bride, I think, to trick
absolutely
people from.
Well, okay, well, so that's the other side too, is that they would all dress alike, and that way, either exes that might steal her before she gets to her groom, evil spirits, pirates. Yeah, I mean, they were trying to prevent her from being stolen. So it was like the old switcheroo, like, you know, yeah, when you are on the lam and you, you know, go out in a bunch of cars and then you, you know, start, everyone's darting around which one was the original car, right?
Yeah.
I guess I'm on the lam a lot, so I can comment to this. It's a bizarre example, but that's kind of the thing. It's like trying to trick them which one is the actual bride. It's like a shell game.
Yeah. I'm Janet. No, I'm Janet.
Exactly.
the wedding rings and engagement rings. I didn't know this at all, but so, well, I've always heard about how circles can symbolize like eternity and you wear it on your left hand, that ring finger, because there's a vein that might lead to your heart, whatever. But which I think, according to Reader's Digest, ancient Egyptians gave rings to each other. I don't know. They probably made them out of some type of plant or something. But then eventually, oh, and then there's different points in history where they point out that people started giving rings in lieu of like money or an object to symbolize ownership of the woman. But
it was
then,
all on a down payment. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
You know, someone brought up here at work, it's interesting how girls, related to that, it's interesting how when you get engaged, a girl is wearing a ring, but the guy at this point isn't.
Mm-hmm.
It seems a little like weird when you think about
well,
it.
Well, because it all goes back to
this
craziness. Most people don't realize what it goes back to.
Yeah. And then diamonds were found in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Cecil Rhodes created the De Beers Mining Company. So he, I think this is in what, 1880? So then they end up just dominating the diamond production. And then after the Depression, they hired this ad agency that launched the A Diamond is Forever slogan. And then that became basically, they told all the men, hey, 2 months worth of salary, go buy a rock, it'll be amazing. And now that's basically where we are today. Everyone has them.
It's fascinating.
Yeah. I'm like, all right, De Beers.
Yeah.
Killing it.
Go De Beers.
Let's see. Oh, Queen Victoria, related to the wedding dress, Queen Victoria, again, apparently people just used to wear whatever was like nicest in their closet, I guess. Nobility dressed in maybe more silver or metallic kind of stuff. But Queen Victoria, the trendsetter, she obviously was, wore white and then like almost unintentionally kickstarted wearing a white wedding dress.
It's the equivalent of like if Kate Middleton wore like a red wedding gown.
Yeah.
It's that sort of like, oh, no, she didn't. Like,
yeah,
it's really shocking behavior. Yeah.
That's so
nice.
It's
amazing.
She just, in one decision like that, just changed a whole industry.
Totally. I love her. Good for her.
Yeah. I mean, it's so funny to think if Queen Victoria was alive right now and she went to a wedding dress shop and the whole place is white and it was because her.
Yeah, totally.
That's nuts. Let's see. What else? Oh, have you ever been to a Jewish wedding?
We do quite a few of them.
They break glass. Mm-hmm. Well, they do a lot of different. I mean, there's like, you know, at all weddings, there's different traditions. But the breaking of the glass, which I thought was kind of a happy thing. Mm-hmm. But in reading about it, there's different interpretations, I guess. But at the end of the ceremony, they'll step on the glass, break it's like wrapped in, you know, cloth or something. But it can, according to what I was reading online, it can symbolize the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. And just represent that, you know, our life is finite. We're not here forever. In the midst of a happy occasion, we shouldn't forget just basically that our life is very fragile. Mm-hmm. Which I didn't realize it was, to me, that seems kind of like, oh yeah, you're right. Yeah. You know, it's kind of sad, but yeah, so that's where that comes from.
It's interesting, but you know, I mean, the idea I think is also this, you know, kind of building the house together.
Yeah.
You know, there is kind of a sadness about it, but there's also sort of the harking back to, you know, the original time and you know, having that link towards history and family, and then the rebuild as a couple of, you know, one's own house and you know, finding that structure together.
Yeah. I like that. I'm not Jewish, but I kind of like that and would want to do it.
I think that it should be your borrowed thing.
It could be. Thank you.
I'm here to solve all your problems.
Yes, you are, Kristen. The honeymoon, first of all, I was just kind of like, oh, that's interesting. People decided to go on a honeymoon. Like, I wonder where that came from. And I still don't really know. But so say when someone says a moon of something, like a month's worth, mm-hmm. According to the New York Post, they did a deep dive on this.
Okay.
As far back as the 5th century and a lot of like European cultures, at weddings, couples would be given a moon or a month's worth of mead, which was an alcoholic kind of honey mm-hmm. wine. And it's mead. The honey wine was kind of believed to be an aphrodisiac. So couples would drink it for the next 30 days, binge on the wine, and then hopefully maybe if they didn't know each other that well, they could establish like sexual intimacy during that time. So the honeymoon is apparently maybe where the phrase came from out of that. Mm-hmm. That honeymoon time and then, you know, whatever.
I've heard that before. It's also, I think, was a traditionally a time when they would visit relatives and family that couldn't attend the wedding.
Yes.
Right?
I also wrote that down too. So they would go, and apparently, according to the New York Post, because there was no need for the couple to be alone together, because sometimes weddings, you know, weren't about romance. They were just like joining of families or, you know, whatever. Yeah, they would go and on kind of a tour, like, hey, sorry you couldn't come to the wedding, but here we are. We're married.
This is the one that was under the veil. <Yeah. laughs> Turns out I got this one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there's that. But yeah, kind of, I don't know, kind of interesting. I think, I mean, regardless, do what you want to do. That's sort of my thought.
Absolutely. It's, you know, it's really about, you know, finding the things that you connect with and the things that are special to you, the things that you want to incorporate. There's no need to do it all. I mean, there's just, I think many times there is this pressure where it's, okay, you know, we've got to cut the cake, check. We've got to, you know, we've got to do this dance, check. We've got to do all these things. You don't. You know, what do you want to incorporate? There's nothing wrong with, you know, having some dinner. Yeah. That's it. You can stop there and that's fine. There's, you know, but just make it your own. Okay, you want to incorporate dancing? Great, do that, you know. Then you can figure out, on top of that, you know, what of these protocol moments, so to speak, or these traditions, what speaks to you both, and then do them. But, you know, omit what doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. Well spoken. That's how I feel. I like the quote on your website.
It's, thank you.
Minimalism is great. Maximalism, too. What we avoid is medium.
I would love to tell you that I authored that quote. It is from David Huey, who is, you know, obviously the mind behind the, you know, the incredible window displays of that, you know, we've all come to appreciate. It's one of my favorite lines ever.
Yeah. I feel like that can apply to a lot of stuff, like beyond just design.
I really believe in it. I mean, it's like, it's kind of a It applies to so much. I mean, it's like you can either, you know, have this large version of it and that's amazing, or, you know, you can just have the nod. But, you know, just don't do average. Just, yeah. You know, pick a road.
Yeah. Pick a road and drive down it and gun it.
That's right. Let's go, Thelma. That's what I
say. How can people reach you? What's your website? KristenBanta.com?
It is.
Okay, cool. Yeah, you have a lot of great examples of stuff that you've done on there. You have a great website.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, I've got a great team behind it, so.
Good job, yeah. Laura. All right. Thank you very much. This has been fun.
I loved it. Thank you so much for having me. I will discuss the backgrounds and wedding traditions with you any day of the week, my friend.
You should come to Cincinnati, where mine is.
I'm in.
March 31st. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. And for anyone who has watched Three Billboards and heard me confuse Frances McDormand with Laurie Metcalf and Lady Bird, I'm sorry. They were both amazing, but I watched them back to back, so, you know. Anyhow, if you're enjoying the podcast, leave us a review in iTunes. Follow us on social media at Olympic and Bundy. We'll be back with a street artist who is awesome. He's been leaving these messages of hope and humor throughout Los Angeles for really the past decade, so look forward to that. Once again, I'm Kelly Taylor, and thank you very much for listening.